Greetings, everybody. Happy Saturday. Really happy to be with you here. Just want to say and start off with everything like, good day. It's a good day to be here. Sorry if things are running a little bit late today. I know some of you who may be regular listeners are used to me putting out the show a little bit earlier, but like you, I was excited for the outdoor game. I was watching. I was waiting, and I was waiting some more after that first period, but you know, nonetheless, here we are. But I was excited for the game. I was excited to see it. The picturesque part of it was amazing. Too bad the ice wasn't cooperating today. And that's just what happens when, you know, it's, hey, it's just below freezing and you got direct sunlight on there. I mean, it's to be what it is to be. So now that we're rescheduled, we can all tune in after this and see the mighty conclusion of the Avs and VGK tonight. A blight very late, especially if you're an East Coast viewer, but I think it's worth tuning into if you can stay up that late. I know I'm gonna try to, but something tells me I'll be dead asleep by the end of the second period there, but who knows. So, but at a bare minimum, tomorrow they're gonna play Boston and Philly at a little bit later in the day, so I think that should work out pretty well from the beginning. So it should be great. But, I mean, these games are going to be awesome. I mean, you already saw the first period. Unfortunately, VGK was a little bit behind, but we'll see what happens at the rest of the game. But I just really thought it was cool how not only is this game, these games are outdoors, but you've got such great competition. And I'm definitely going to be tuning in and have tuned in, at least for the first period. So. But for now, I just want to start out and say thanks for tuning in again. This is From the Point. I'm Danny Lambert, your host as always. If you're a repeat listener, you know the format. But if not, get ready for another great hockey discussion around another great hockey book. I appreciate you tuning in, and you know, many thanks as always. This week we'll be finishing up our Black History Month series with a discussion about another Black pioneer of the sport, and we're going to celebrate their accomplishments and contributions to the game. To start things off, though, this week, I just want to start with a story to set the stage about one of the first hockey books that I ever read. I was 13, and I picked up Wayne Gretzky's autobiography, the one that he wrote with Rick Riley that was published around way back in 1990. Not dating myself or anything there. But at the same time, it was, you know, it just kind of covered about half the story of Gretzky because it really was, like I said, it was published in 1990. But it was still just great to hear about Wayne's thoughts about the game, the inside stories, and especially what went down on those Oilers dynasties of the 1980s. But one thing that stuck out to me, and always has, especially when I hear about this player that we're going to cover this week, is in his book, Gretzky stated pretty much in no uncertain terms that if he had to play a hockey game for $1 million, and he was asked who needed to be the goaltender for that game, he wouldn't hesitate a second to select his former Edmonton teammate Grant Fuhr to backstop that game. That's quite an endorsement considering, you know, Gretzky's played with a ton of great netminders over the years. I mean, start the list. But I think he was referring to what you've seen from Grant Fuhr if you've seen him over the years, and what you'll figure out if you ever watch highlights or even read the book. He's a big game goaltender, and he just came through in the clutch so many times for Edmonton and Buffalo, St. Louis, all those teams that he played for later on. So that's why Gretzky said that, I think. And it's that reputation that really made Grant Fuhr a Hall of Fame goaltender. He won 5 Stanley Cups with the Oilers and was an All-Star 6 times, Jennings Trophy winner once, and a Vezina Trophy winner once. That's pretty much quite the impressive resume. He wasn't always the best statistically, but he just won, and that's what he graded himself on, which he's currently 12th all-time on the NHL list of wins for goaltenders with 403. Grant's success, his successes resonate in the hockey universe for more than just their face value. Grant is Black, and as such, his body of work over his 19-year NHL career makes him the most successful Black player ever to play in the NHL to date. While there have been 97 Black players in the history of the National Hockey League, none have had the success that Grant has had. Sure, Jerome Iginla is close, but he's never won a Stanley Cup. And sure, some other black players have had their names etched on Lord Stanley's Cup, but none have gotten close to the five times that Grant Fuhr's name has appeared on that cup. Not to mention, Fuhr is the first black player to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Still, to simply say that the quiet man from Spruce Grove, Alberta, has been such a good hockey player is not the whole story, of course. Grant's life has been one that you'll see has had its challenges mixed in with some successes. His road to the Hall of Fame had some bumps for sure, some of his design, and some not. In his 2014 book, Grant Fuhr, The Story of a Hockey Legend, he wrote with Bruce Downbiggin, Grant explains the ups and downs and what it took for him to get through his 19-year career. I'm excited to talk about Grant and his book this week, as I'm sure you're ready, just like me, to dive into the warm-up and get to the discussion coming after this.
Over the line, shifting in. Oh, Fuhr robbed him. What a play.
I would have to say Grant Fuhr was the quickest that I ever saw. He had these amazing cat-like reflexes, pucks that you think were going in, and all of a sudden, you know, he got his pad over, he got his glove.
He had the ability to keep himself calm and in big situations was a real pressure goalie.
The timing of his saves was absolutely spectacular. In the third period, no matter how he played the first two periods, he would make the big save.
That was from the segment that was done on Grant Fuhr for the 100 Greatest Players in the first 100-year history of the NHL that they did for the NHL Centennial. So that's pretty much a good feather in your cap right there to be named one of the top 100 players in league history. Not to mention just some of the great things that those players were saying about Grant. The first voice you heard was Pat LaFontaine talking about how tough Grant was, and his reflexes just looked like he was taking a goal sure thing away from you. I found that to be really cool. And then, of course, you heard from the great Mark Messier, and Mark talking about what a great teammate Grant was and what an important part of the Oilers dynasty he was in his time. And that's where I want to start with the warm-up, is just saying, you know, sometimes some people forget that Grant Fuhr was such an important part of that Oilers dynasty of the 1980s. They had so many outstanding players on those teams, it's often hard to remember to mention Grant as a part of those teams. But as alluded to before, the members of that team would certainly not forget to mention Grant. They might even mention him first. He was an important part of those teams and to the victory and the overall fabric that is hockey today. Unlike the black pioneers of the sport before him, Grant did not have the obstacles in front of him like, say, Herb Garnacki, Willie O'Ree, or Val James. It seemed like the idea of him playing hockey as a black man was not much of an issue. From an early age, he was successful, and he was able to jump right from major junior over to the NHL and enter the league at age 19 after being drafted 8th overall. There were no obstacles to entry into the NHL for him. The black players before him had pretty much cleared the way, and that was a good thing for Grant, for sure. So Fuhr was just really able to play from the beginning, and he did so at a high level by rising to the occasion every time. Former teammate of his, Fred Brathwaite, said it best when he explained that, quote, he might let in a goal or two, but when it came down to the final thing, he'd raise his game up to help his team win the Stanley Cup or Canada Cup or all those other things, end quote. Grant was a big-time goalie, and like Brathwaite said, he just knew how to win. In his book, he explains that he didn't really worry about the stats, only the fact that the only stat that he really cared about was that he won. I found that his book was a strong overview of his career. It was mostly biographical. It was mostly in a biographical account written by Downbiggin that is augmented by biographical injects from Grant. It's almost like reading an interview with really no questions asked, except the interviewee inserts every once in a while to add to the story. It works overall, though, and so it really doesn't feel like you're not getting the story from Fuhr. I will say that for as good a summary of his career and life the book is, it's not very deep in some of the particular subjects, and we'll go into that a little bit later. That might be by design, as Grant is a very quiet and reserved person normally, but if you read the book, you'll probably find yourself asking for more details at some points, especially on the personal front. Still, as far as Fuhr's playing days go, this is an excellent book. You really have a strong level of detail on his time playing for the Oilers, Maple Leafs, Sabres, Kings, Blues, and Flames. I left the book with no questions asked on his accomplishments as a goaltender, really. Great, great career summary overall. But to say that Grant Fuhr's life was simple would be to simply understate things significantly. The arc of the player and the man are what I liked most about this book. Like I said before, Fuhr was a very young man when he entered the NHL, and it seemed to me that the real story was watching the young phenom grow and change into the old veteran who was playing until he was 37 years old. It was how he changed his approach in dealing with injury, off-ice distractions, and doubters that really made the book for me. So to start the discussion of the book, I felt like it would be best to explain just how the legend of Grant Fuhr came to be. Why was he a winner? What did winning look like for Grant Fuhr? What built Grant into a winner? After all, he didn't win at every turn in his career. Just how did he get to be the player he was? And what was it that made him a winner on all those Oilers teams? We'll dive into those questions in the first period coming at you after this.
Being raised in Spruce Grove, for me, was awesome. There was only, I think, 600 or 700 people. Even through high school, I think there was myself and three other kids that were of color. Other than that, that was it for the whole town. Because there wasn't a whole lot of diversity, it was never an issue and never ever brought up. You got to go out, you get to play. Everybody treated us fairly, and I was lucky that way. The first part about what I liked about goaltending is I saw the equipment as a kid. I think that was the greatest thing, is I loved the equipment. It looked cool. Missed the memo that things actually hurt once in a while. As a kid growing up in a small town in Canada, your dream's to play in the National Hockey League.
Dropping it back. Red, good, save in close.
Pass the by. Shoot. And Fuhr out 15 feet to make the same shot. What a save by Grant Fuhr.
Some guys are hung up on numbers, save percentage, all that fun stuff. But at the end of the day, as long as you give up one less than the other team, winning is what matters.
The Oilers have won the Stanley Cup.
They now become a great hockey club.
He is becoming the best, if not the best, money goaltender in the game today.
There, you heard it right there from the man. That was Grant talking about his childhood in Spruce Grove. And what really sticks out to me is that he explains just how accepting things were for him, even in an early age there, and how he was able to not worry about the issues of race, that he was a black hockey player, and just play hockey. And it really showed just what can happen and just how far things had come with regards to that. And it really showed, because Fuhr obviously blossomed into a great player. He didn't have the distractions that, say, Willie O'Ree or Val James had back in the day. So to start the first period off, I just want to start by saying Grant's beginnings really start when his mother, Betty, who was unable to have children of her own, was offered to adopt a mixed-race baby boy. The Fuhrers, Robert and Betty, raised Grant in their quiet suburban Edmonton home as their own, as Grant describes the color of his skin was not an issue growing up, like you heard in the interview. He's always considered Robert and Betty his parents, and as he says, that's just the way it was. He doesn't tell any instances of racism really growing up, because he really didn't encounter any. He'd have to wait till much later to even have an instance of racism that he felt was worth putting into the book. I think that's really significant and a good feather in his cap for where he grew up in Western Canada. His love of the game of hockey really came directly from his dad. As he explains it, his dad was an athlete even when he was a kid, and Grant loved to watch him play, especially hockey. The factor that led Grant to goaltending, though, was a little more kid logic at work, as he decided that having all those pads on would be pretty cool. Good thing for the hockey world that it ended up being a great fit for him. The story goes, too, that Grant, at this age, knew he was a right-handed catcher, but could only get a left-handed catching glove, so he learned to use both hands to catch the puck with. But once he got his hands on a right-handed glove, he got even better, as it felt better to catch, and he was able to easily start moving the puck with his stick using the other hand in this regard. So, as a goaltender, Grant excelled right away. He stood out and got noticed at an early age, which led to him joining the Victoria Cougars of the WHL at age 17. In Victoria, it was obvious from the gate that Grant was something special, And in his first year of major junior, he posted 30 wins in 43 games with a save percentage of .911. His second year in Victoria, his draft year, Grant put up strong numbers again with a save percentage of .908, and he won 48 of 59 contests he backstopped. He was quickly gaining the reputation as a quick reactor who could move the puck very well and didn't need to rely so much on technique because he had such superior instincts. Definitely attractive to NHL clubs at that time. That strong season led to him being drafted by his hometown Oilers at number 8 overall in the 1981 draft. The Oilers had options, but GM Glenn Sather decided to take Fuhr high because of his talent and upside. Also to that point, Grant was only the fourth goaltender taken inside the top 10 of the NHL draft. Today, he's still the 14th highest drafted netminder ever. And make no mistakes about it, the Oilers had plans for Fuhr as they signed him and put him right on the big club's roster to start the 1981-82 season, even though he was only 19 years old at that time. In 1981, though, the Oilers were not yet the dynasty that they would become in the 1980s. Some pieces of maturity were still needed. Gretzky was Gretzky, but the team wasn't quite the full package yet. They had strong scoring, which was what they were built to do, but even the defenders like Paul Coffey were built for offense, so it was very important to make sure that the goaltender was someone they could count on, and Grant seemed to be that goalie, as he could make the big stops even if he was hung out to dry by his defenders. Out of the gate, Grant looked to be dominant in 81-82. He posted a 28-5-14 record and propelled the Oilers to a regular season Smythe Division title. He finished second in the Calder Cup voting to Dale Hawerchuk, who was almost unstoppable for the Jets, posting 103 points in 80 games. So that's actually kind of understandable when you look at it. Also, Hawerchuk was drafted number one overall the year previous in Grant's draft year. So if you're going to lose out to someone, I suppose it would be a guy who scored 103 points in the season. Still, the Oilers were upended in the first round of the playoffs by the Kings that season, but the future looked bright for Fuhr backstopping Edmonton for the foreseeable future. Still, in 1982-83, things would be different for Grant. His play just wasn't as sharp, as he struggled mightily compared to his freshman campaign. In addition to that, a shoulder injury sidelined him for a good part of the year, and the rise of Andy Moog forced Sather to play the two goaltending phenoms in a more of a tandem situation rather than one dominating over the other. Moog got the call for the playoffs that year, and Grant watched from the bench as the Oilers swept through the Campbell Conference but fell in the Cup Finals to the Oilers dynasty in a 4-0 sweep. The next season in 83-84, the Oilers were back in form as a team and busting heads in the Campbell Conference. Sather continued to rotate Fuhr and Moog in net, with Moog getting the majority of the starts in the regular season. But as they say, getting hot at the right time makes all the difference, and Grant put in some great games in March and April, and that forced Slats to ride him into the and during the playoffs. It ended up being the right call, as Grant was money during the Oilers' run to that cup. He lost only 4 games in net and posted an impressive stat line of 2.99 goals against and a save percentage of .991. The Oilers kept their foot on the gas offensively and just depended on Fuhr to stop sometimes up to 30-plus shots a night. All of his teammates knew that when the pressure was up, Grant was up for the game. They said that he had the ability to up his game, and as the game became more contested, and in some cases, that was the difference in the wins that they had en route to the Cup. Thus, it was during that Cup run that Fuhr's legend as a goaltender who won the big game really started to take flight. Grant would head into that summer as a Stanley Cup winner, having backstopped one of the most dominant playoff runs by a team in NHL history. The Oilers only lost 4 games, to include a 4-1 Cup final beatdown of the Islanders, ending their dynasty and thus launching the Oilers dynasty. So, there was reason to celebrate, and celebrate the Oilers did, and Grant along with them. But some would say that the celebrating might have been a little too much, as we'll talk about a little bit later. People would start to wonder if Grant was a little too into the party that summer, but for now, the 84-85 season loomed, and the Oilers looked like shoe-ins to defend their Cup title. We'll get into that, and the effect both good and bad, that the successes of the Oilers had on Grant in the next period. Stand by for the second period, which is up next.
In 1981, goalie Grant Fuhr was drafted in the first round by his hometown team, the Edmonton Oilers.
Grant had a great glove hand, very intelligent. There was no question that he wasn't going to be a great player.
The Oilers had joined the NHL just 2 years earlier, but they already had the game's best player and a supporting cast of budding superstars. Their freewheeling playing style made them a juggernaut on offense, but left their goalies exposed.
He was a perfect goalie in temperament for us. Wasn't worried about statistics, didn't care about goals against, didn't care about anything other than winning.
I like the philosophy. You know you're going to get 3 or 4 goal cushion to work with. I could make a mistake here or there, and I'd get away with it. My job's just to keep it one less.
Fuhr won an NHL record 23 straight games his rookie year and earned a reputation as one of the NHL's best clutch goalies.
Nothing fazed him. Didn't bother him that he gave up a bad goal to make it 5-4. When the game was on the line, he'd flash out that glove and make a save, and you're like, whoa. And then here come the Oilers.
We came in after the second period, and we were down 4-2. It didn't matter to who. He'd look around the room and say, guys, they're not getting any more. So my eyes would go, bing, and we'd go win the game, 7-4.
In the 1984 Stanley Cup Final, Fuhr set the tone with a dominating shutout in Game 1 over the 4-time defending champion New York Islanders. The Oilers won in 5 games and repeated the following year, thanks in part to Fuhr saving 2 penalty shots.
We were all young. We all kind of meshed at the same time. The guys, you were closer to them than you were your own family almost.
In 1987-88, Fuhr played in 75 of 80 regular season games, took home the Vezina Trophy as the league's top goaltender, and helped the Oilers capture their 4th Stanley Cup.
That was a good clip right there, because it pretty much sums up what the Oiler dynasty was for the 1980s. And what I also like about it is that it's very centric as to what Grant's role was in that dynasty, and that's really what we're going to talk about here in the second period and deep dive a little bit further into. So we're starting off, it's 1984-85 season, and it was pretty much more of the same for Grant. He split time with Moog once again in the regular season, and even when missing some time due to injury, he still finished with an impressive 26-8-7 record. Then they went into the playoffs, and the Oilers were once again unstoppable as they coasted their second cup win with Fuhr in net, who lost only 3 times en route to the cup win. 85-86 was a little bit of a different result for the Oilers, though, as Fuhr and company crushed the regular season once again, finishing 56-17-7. The playoffs were a little bit of a different story. The first round started strong as they beat the Canucks in a first-round sweep. But in the second round, against the Calgary Flames in the Smythe Division Final, things took a little bit of a different turn. The Oilers went all the way to a Game 7 as the Flames triumphed in that Game 7 off of what would be a most bizarre goal, to say the least. Edmonton rookie defender Steve Smith had bounced a puck off of the back of Grant's pad. If you ever watch it, it's basically he's trying to clear the puck, hits Grant in the back of the leg, and it goes into their own goal. And that ended up being the game winner for Calgary, who ended up moving on, while the Oilers, who were heavily favored to win the cup again, ended up going home. So that summer was really hard. In addition to the Steve Smith goal, Grant lost his father during those 86 playoffs due to cancer. And on top of it, there was constant contract issues around the team and Grant due to Peter Pocklington's, the Oilers owner's, issue with revenue, shrinking revenues, and having to cut payroll a little bit. Add to that, it started to become widely reported and rumored that Grant was using recreational drugs. He admits in the book that until 1986, he had been able to keep it largely under control. But the letdowns of that spring made it for a hard summer, which things got tough for him. He doesn't elaborate too much in the book on what specifically out of control meant and what some of those things were. But since he's a very private person in general, I'd venture to say that it was fairly significant, especially if he decided to mention it like that in the book. So looking at 86-87, Grant was able to keep things together that season, despite some of the off-ice distractions. And with the invigorated Oilers club, the team ended up cruising back into the Stanley Cup Finals that year. This time it was against Iron Mike Keenan's Philadelphia Flyers, who were actually able to get the Oilers to a Game 7. Still, Grant was strong in the playoffs, except for a bit of a stumble in the opening round. After that, he was lights out. And in that final, he played up to the competition against the Flyers and added his third cup ring, adding once again that Grant Fuhr is a big game goaltender. The spring of 1987 brought Grant some more fame in the form of a Canada Cup victory. The 1987-88 season was wide open for Grant as Annie Moog had moved on to the Boston Bruins, and Grant stayed healthy, playing 75 games and winning 40 of them. The playoffs that year, the Oilers were more like the Oilers of old as they blew through the competition and lost only twice en route to their fourth cup in five seasons. Grant was also recognized that summer with his first and only Vezina trophy as the league's best netminder. 1987-88 was probably the best run in the history of Grant's career and, for that part, the Oilers dynasty. Then into the 1988-89 season, things had changed and started to get a bit rocky for Fuhr. On the ice, he was still performing well, but the Oilers had just lost Gretzky and a few other pieces and just really weren't the same. Add to that, Grant's number two goaltender, Bill Ranford, was starting to play well and even posted some slightly better numbers than Fuhr that year. The playoffs would be a disappointment as the Oilers were beat in seven games in the first round by the LA Kings and their former mate, Wayne Gretzky. As you know, it probably stung, and it sure did. Then there was more drama in the summer of 1989. Over Grant's contract that led to rumors that eventually, led to what would be a short-lived retirement bluff that was concocted by Fuhr and his agent, mostly his agent. The Oilers couldn't pay him competitively, and in order to force their hand or a trade, Grant's agent decided to double down on the gamble and have Fuhr retire. It didn't work, and Fuhr was ended up firing his agent, and they went back on his retirement in September of that year. So he's back with the Oilers and playing, even though there was kind of a, as we said, contentious summer. On top of that, the same time, Fuhr got divorced and returned to play only 15 largely unimpressive games before being sidelined with shoulder surgery that season. In his absence, Bill Ranford started to cement himself as the team's number one goaltender and really dealt a huge blow to Grant's status as the number one goaltender when he backstopped the Oilers to a cup that season. Grant added a fifth cup ring to his collection but was on the shelf when it happened and wondered if he still had a job heading into that summer. Then in the summer of 1990, things really crashed down for Grant. His ex-wife told the Edmonton Press about Grant's drug use, and it became unavoidable and something that he could no longer deny. He came clean to the press and even went to rehab in Florida that summer. How bad had his drug use been? Former teammates started to tell the press that Fuhr had often been speaking incoherently and wasn't able to say no to cocaine during that time. Pretty damning, but at the same time, you can see that Grant understood that and started to seek help. The issue became, though, at that time, the NHL substance abuse policy was not something you would call, well, fair. The league called an in-person hearing in September and still decided to suspend Grant for a full season based off of his previous use. This was despite proof that Grant had been clean for almost 2 years and had sought help in many avenues. Still, the league threw the book at him, but they gave him one lifeline in the form of a provision that if he stayed clean, he could be reinstated after 60 games that season. And he was able to, and was granted permission to play for and rejoin the Oilers later that year. You might think that Grant would have some issues when he returned to the team, but in his first game back, he shut the Devils out and then proceeded to go on a tear, playing himself back into the number one slot and forced the Oilers to ride him into the playoffs that year. Except for three games missed due to injury, Grant backstopped the Oilers to a conference finals appearance, but the Oilers, not being the Oilers of old, could not hold off the Cinderella North Stars that year as they were sent packing into the summer of 1991. Grant had gone through some serious issues in that last year, and in the end, 1991 showed him that he still had it. He could still play in the NHL. Bill Ranford explained it best when he said, quote, There's a lot of talk about who's the best, but Grant doesn't talk about it. He just proves it. End quote. Prove it he did through some adversity. Granted, a lot of it was of his making, but in the end, Fuhrer was clean and he was ready to continue with his career and life full speed ahead. The only issue left lingering was where would he play? The Oilers were cash-strapped, and Ranford was a younger and cheaper option. But still, Grant figured he'd start the 91-92 season in Edmonton. But as fate had it, he'd find himself somewhere else sooner than he thought. We'll talk about where he landed and how the end of Grant's career did almost as much or more in some cases to cement his legacy as a Hall of Famer. Stay with us. The third period is up next after this.
That summer, a blockbuster trade sent Wayne Gretzky to Los Angeles. Fuhrer would leave 3 years later. He played for three teams in 5 years and was thought to be past his prime when he joined the St. Louis Blues in 1995. Fuhrer had a resurgence that year and helped turn the Blues into a contender.
He was on a mission, and he had one of the most amazing years of any goalie I've ever seen.
Fuhrer played 79 of 82 regular season games, an NHL record for a goaltender.
I really believe if he did not get hurt against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, that we would have won the Stanley Cup that year.
Fuhrer never fully recovered from damage to his knee ligaments. He finished his career with the Calgary Flames, retiring in 2000 as one of only six goalies with more than 400 wins. A seven-time All-Star, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2003, the same year his jersey was raised to the rafters just down the road from where he grew up.
To get in the play in the National Hockey League, you're trying to make a difference every chance you got. I enjoyed putting the stuff on every day, and I enjoyed winning more than anything.
Much like the second period, the way we led that off, that's where we were leading off here in the third period. That clip you just heard is a good summary for what we're going to talk about, which is Grant's later career after leaving the Oilers, going to Toronto, then to Buffalo, St. Louis, and on to Calgary. I really enjoyed hearing about the streak he had in St. Louis of consecutive games played. That season was really cool if you lived through it. It just seemed like something special, not only just from Grant's end, but for the entire team. Gretzky had been traded there. It just seemed like they had a chance to win it. And what stuck out to me is the quote that if Grant hadn't been injured in round one against the Maple Leafs, maybe the Blues team would have defeated the Red Wings in game seven in that overtime loss that they had and gone on to win the cup. They certainly had the firepower to do it, and Grant was playing out of his mind, so you never know. But here we are, we're in the third period, and we're picking up with the Oilers being really, you know, cash strapped at that time, and they decided that they were going to start shopping Grant and other members of that core of their team. So by September, it just seemed like they had a great deal of things to sort out. And one of them was finally trading Grant, which they did. And that was to the Maple Leafs along with Glenn Anderson. It seemed like a great move. And Grant was excited to play in Toronto for a team that he had admired growing up. Also, his financial situation improved massively as he finally got the bump in pay that Edmonton was unable to give him at that point. Still, as Grant would come to find out, the Leafs of 1991-1992 were not very good. They were a team that had little firepower and were trying to rebuild after their former owner had left them in a bad position with horrible personnel moves that had piled up. Grant also started to realize that playing in Toronto was much different, and the press was pretty crazy, as some of you might know. He posted a 25-33-5 record that season, which would be his first losing season in the NHL. Still, the club made a move that season that would change the Maple Leafs' fortunes. They acquired Doug Gilmour in a 10-player huge trade that would eventually set up, which would be a massive success in the next season. The 1992-1993 Maple Leafs were much better. Grant broke training camp that year as the number one netminder and played well to start the season. Still, some injuries had kept him out of the lineup and allowed rookie Felix Potvin to take a few starts, and Potvin took off. The situation, once again, like with Ranford, made Grant sort of expendable. And the Leafs, who were looking to plus up for an anticipated huge playoff run, saw Fuhrer as a trade chip, and trade him they did to the Buffalo Sabres for Dave Vanderchuk, who became a huge part of that Leaf team that made a run to the conference finals that year. Now that he was in Buffalo and reunited with John Muckler, who had coached him in Edmonton, it looked like Grant was in a great place. He was locked in to that 1993 playoffs right away, shutting out the top-seeded Bruins in Game 1 of their first round, and eventually defeating the Bruins in a four-game sweep. So you'd figure there'd be more fortunes ahead, but their next round opponent was the Montreal Canadiens, and Grant and the Sabres got swept by the Habs, and you can't really blame them for that because that was the overtime Warriors team that ended up winning the Cup that year. So really no harm, no foul, and the future looked bright for the Sabres to come back and be a little bit better that next year with Grant as their backstop. Still, there was a minor interruption to his time in Buffalo that Grant would encounter that summer, and that would really be his only noteworthy instance of racism in the book that he would tell. And as Grant would put it, really probably the first big thing in his life, and really only thing. As you already know, Grant's a scratch golfer, and he's an avid golfer. He talks about it a lot in the book. When moving to Buffalo, he applied for a membership at the Transit Valley Country Club in Amherst. He was denied membership with no explanation. It was later leaked that the reason for Grant's rejection was that he was black. Grant was not overly upset about it, as he decided to take his money and play elsewhere. But it was something that the community really didn't support and decided to make a big deal for obvious reasons. As Grant put it, quote, "If that's the way they think, that's fine," end quote. I think that was just a reserved and shy fear kind of dealing with it in his own way, in something in a way that kept him comfortable. It doesn't mean acceptance, but I think at that time Grant didn't really know what to do, and he just decided, hey, I'll go play somewhere else if they don't want me to play here. And I think that's totally fine and acceptable, but luckily it was rectified. They even ended up offering him a membership in the end, which he just decided to turn down anyways because he had already established himself at another club. But back on the ice, the Sabres had the potential, but struggled to live up to it. 1993-94 saw them exit the playoffs in round one to the Devils after only a fourth place finish in their division during the regular season. And for Grant, it started to become clear that he was getting outplayed again by his backup, who was none other than the future fellow Hall of Famer Dominic Hasek. Hasek got a majority of the starts that season and then played all of the playoffs. Then the next season, with the writing on the wall and Grant getting off to a bad start, he was dealt to the LA Kings after only playing three games. In LA, he was relegated to the bench as he didn't start much at all. He ended up the 1994-95 season knowing that he had no place in LA and contemplating his future in the league. He knew he could and should still be a starter, but where was that job to be found? A chance meeting with Mike Keenan that offseason would make that answer clear. Keenan was shaking things up in his second year as the coach and GM of the St. Louis Blues. He had just traded Curtis Joseph and was looking to get a new number one goaltender installed. Keenan had been in awe of Grant's and seeing him play in the Cup Finals as coach of the Flyers, and then coaching him in the 87 Canada Cup. He offered Grant a contract almost on the spot, and so Fuhr reported to the Blues in 1995-96 with big shoes to fill, as the fans were not happy about Curtis Joseph being traded away to Edmonton. In St. Louis, Grant would find himself as a clear number one and a coach who really believed in him. He would stumble out of the gate, and he realized that he needed to up his conditioning game if he was going to continue to play at a high level into his 30s. He hooked up with St. Louis track and field legendary coach Bobby Kersey. Kersey worked with Grant, keeping him in shape and able to be durable enough to play night in and night out, which is what Keenan wanted. So much so that Grant appeared in 79 games that season. That's all but three games. And Grant's 76 straight starts was an NHL record. The Blues were riding high going into that year's playoffs as they acquired Gretzky via trade and looked to make some waves. But an injury to Grant in the first round that blew out his knee, he was sidelined and lost for the rest of the playoffs. The Blues lost in the next round in seven games to the eventual Cup winners, the Detroit Red Wings. So that summer, Grant spent some time rehabbing his knee, and thanks to Kersey, he was able to be ready for the next season. He picked up right where he left off and backstopped 73 games that season for the Blues. Still, the Blues had an early exit from the playoffs again at the hands of the Red Wings. As a matter of fact, the next two seasons were fairly uneventful as Grant played well, but really started to see his role diminish as, once again, a young goaltender started to take over much of his playing time. By the summer of 1999, Jamie McLennan and Roman Turek were the goaltending tandem that the Blues were going to go with. Grant contemplated retirement as it was about that time, and it was on his mind, but he decided after a call from Brian Sutter that he'd head to Calgary to become a starter once again. That season was a good one for Grant as he moved back to Alberta and really got to mentor some great players like Fred Brathwaite and Jerome Iginla. Still, as expected, time and injury didn't allow for Grant's time with the Flames to last more than one season. He retired from the NHL at the end of the 99-2000 season, and it was clear that his career was one of the best of any goaltender in NHL history, and that the Hall of Fame would soon be calling afterwards, which it did in 2003 in his first year of eligibility. It was clear from the day that he announced his retirement that he was one of the best ever to play his position and to have played in the NHL. That is his legacy, but when it comes to race as a black player, it still can be said that he's the most successful black player to this day. He may not have encountered the roadblocks that, say, a Carnegie, O'Ree, or James did, but it was because of those black players before him, Grant was able to become the player that he did. He's able to let people judge him by his play and not by the color of his skin because others had sacrificed before him to allow for that. He was able to let people judge him by his play, and it was just easier for him. Grant knows that this sacrifice is today, and he's active in diversity programs and certainly is aware of his role of inspiring the next crop of young players of all backgrounds. To me, it's simple. While Grant may not have been discriminated against like other black players in the past, it doesn't mean that his accomplishments don't help to inspire the next crop of black players who many, like former teammate Jerome Iginla, saw him as an inspiration to start playing the game in the first place. Alrighty then, I think that's it on that. So let's move on to the post game and wrap this one up.
I think Willie O'Ree was a big influence for us. I mean, he went through the racial injustice, the hard stuff. The guys like Tony McKegney, Mike Marson, Bill Riley, Val James, all laid the groundwork for myself to be successful.
It is significant that Grant Fuhr, a player from Spruce Grove, is being inducted into the Hall of Fame and being honored by the Oilers tonight in this fashion.
Seeing the game where it's at now and where it was at when I started, I think it's growing. I think there's still work to do. You have to give the kids an opportunity to try it. Once kids try it, they'll fall in love with it. If you can expose the game and give kids that opportunity, you're gonna see more and more black kids playing. So in an outside way, am I responsible? Possibly, maybe. Does it feel good? Yeah, it does. And I think before I finally decide to fade away, I'd love to see where there's hundreds of black kids playing in the National Hockey League. So I'd love to see the game keep growing.
I really like that. It's a great way to end this show, and because that's what Grant thinks about diversity and what the sacrifices of black players before him was and what his responsibility is this day and how he sees his legacy going forward. So that's really what it's about, and I was glad to hear it, and I hope you enjoyed hearing that as well. These days, you can find Grant Fuhr in Palm Springs running a golf course. As you might expect, he loves it, and he gets to be around his second passion, which is golf, and still be social and keep enough time for his family. He still loves to be around hockey, but these days, he's not all about the game like he was in the past. Before I even picked up this book, I knew that Grant was one of the best goaltenders in history. But when I finished the book, I realized that his career seemed to be about perseverance. Many of the players with talent like his get things handed to them. But it seemed like to me that Grant was pretty much fighting to keep at the top of his game, overcome injury, and overcome competition from other goaltenders. It just seemed like At every stop, he faced some kind of injury that threatened his spot or competition with other goaltenders on the roster. Whatever the case might be, he just had stuff to overcome. In Edmonton, he had to show that he was better than Andy Moog and Bill Ranford. In Toronto, it was Felix Potman, and then in Buffalo, it was Dominic Hasek. He won some of those battles, and he lost some of them. But every time he approached them with class, and he just went out and played. He never was one to badmouth his teammates. Sure, he always wanted to be number one in net, but he always played fair and moved on if the team decided to go another way and just prove that they were wrong. I always remember watching Führer in the 1990s with St. Louis. He was in the middle of that streak that he had, and it was just like watching a machine. And he was in his mid-30s. It was impressive, and it spoke to the man's dedication to his teammates and to the game. Bottom line, it's not just the winning that made Grant great, it's his quiet ability and drive to compete. Taking a final look at the book, though, I'll be honest. It was good, but not really dynamic or groundbreaking. The format of having down big and right, then insert direct thoughts about the events from Führer was different for sure, and it leaves you wanting a little bit more from Führer himself. Also, really, in the end, the book was just largely a recap of Grant's career, and that's fine. Just to know that when you read this book, that's really what you can expect. Still, I enjoyed it, and I know you will too if you read it. It's also a very quick read, so no need to worry about that. And I'll just say this. If you've got a moment, go ahead and pick it up. You won't be sorry, because Grant's is a good story, and it's a really important one. Okay, then. That's where we're going to end today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I did, and I'm glad you decided to spend more time with me as we went over the career of another great hockey player. So, with this being the last week of February, I also hope you enjoyed our look at other Black pioneers of the sport, and encourage you to go back and listen to the other episodes on Herb Garnegy, Willie O'Ree, and Val James if you want to know more about some of the great Black hockey players of the past. Also, if you have a free moment, please give us a great rating and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast type place. Look us up on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram also for some great updates every week. And finally, if you have some comments, give us an email at fromthepointpodcast16@gmail.com. So, looking ahead to next week's book, we'll be taking a look at the special experiences of the NHL's One Goal Club in One to Remember by Ken Reed. It's a great book about stories of hockey players who only scored one goal in the NHL in their lives, and what what their one goal was, and just sort of what their playing careers and lives were like. It's great, and I know that we'll have a great time talking about it. So till next week, thanks for listening, have a wonderful week, and stay classy, hockey fans.